Experts generally regard personal computers as commodity products, akin to toasters. But Google assembles, deploys, and is constantly improving the performance capabilities of more than 100,000 inexpensive PCs. It builds and stacks them atop one another in refrigerator-sized racks, stringing them together with patented software and wiring. No enterprise has more computing power than Google, with its network of garden-variety PCs on steroids. They run the largest computer system in the world, Hennessy said. I don't think there is even anything close. In an age of specialization of labor, Google secretly assembles each and every PC in its massive network inside secure facilities that are strictly off-limits to outsiders, including visitors to the Googleplex who think they have seen it all. Google is able to do this affordably because the massive scale of its operation makes it cost-effective and of higher quality than buying custom PCs from someone else. Working together, these customized computers rapidly carry out searches by breaking the queries down into tiny parts. These parts are processed simultaneously by comparing them to copies of the Internet that have been indexed and organized in advance. With plenty of redundancy built into its network, Google is able to reliably fire up more and more computers daily, rapidly returning search results without a glitch and without human intervention, even as some PCs burn out and are not replaced. Instead, other PCs take over. Remarkably, as Hennessy noted, there is no comparable computer network or database in the public or private sector anywhere in the world. They realized early on that if they did a good job with the hardware, that it could be a competitive strength for the company, he said. The hardware would be the key factor in being able to do search efficiently, and they are replicating computers at such a large volume that it makes sense to do it themselves. It is why launching a search engine that is competitive with Google would require a much larger capital investment than people realize. Thanks to the inclusion of small, highly targeted text advertisements that searchers click on for information, Google the search engine became Google the money machine a few years ago. This was while Google was still private, and thus inscrutable to all but the innermost circle of early investors and employees. But once its stunningly rapid growth and billions of dollars in ad-generated profits became public knowledge, a growing legion of investors recognized that something unique was going on and sought to own a part of it. On August 19, 2004, Google went public in an unconventional initial public offering at $85 per share, raising nearly $2 billion in the largest technology IPO ever. In less than a year, the stock soared to more than $300 a share, making it a financial and technology powerhouse without peer. In the 7 years since Google's founding in 1998, Microsoft stock did not increase in value at all. During that same period, Google shares came to be worth more than $80 billion. If by chance you missed out on this bonanza, remember that the experts did too. Blue chip venture capital firms, Yahoo, AltaVista, and many other major search engine and technology companies approached by Stanford University turned down the chance to buy Google's search system for $1 million. Their refusals forced Stanford PhD students Sergey Brin and Larry Page to reluctantly drop out of school and start the firm. By the summer of 2005, each of the founders had a net worth of more than $10 billion. Hennessy recalled the first time a Stanford professor brought Google to his attention in the mid-1990s. Like Brin and Page, Hennessy had grown frustrated using AltaVista, the best search engine at that time. While it did a reasonably good job of canvassing the Internet, it did a poor job of ranking search results. Hennessy remembers hearing that the creators of a search engine on campus, through a new mathematical formula known as PageRank, had come up with a way to give users the most important search results in a flash. As a computer scientist of note, he typed his own name into the Google search box to see what would happen. "The first thing that came up for me was Stanford University," Hennessy said. "That didn't happen on the other search engines." Sergey Brin and Larry Page cruised onto the stage to the kind of roars and excitement that teenagers normally reserve for rock stars. They had entered the auditorium through a rear door, leaving behind photographers, sunglasses, a pair of hired cars with drivers, and an attractive young woman who was traveling with Sergei. Dressed casually, they sat down and cracked smiles, pleased at their hero's welcome. They were near the birthplace of civilization, thousands of miles and an ocean away from the place where their work together had begun. It seemed as good a place as any for a pair of young superstars, whose shared ambition revolved around changing the world, to talk about what they had done, how they had done it, and what their dreams were for the future. "Do you guys know the story of Google?" Paige asked. "Do you want me to tell it?" "Yes," the crowd shouted. It was September 2003, and the hundreds of students and faculty at this Israeli high school geared toward the brightest young minds in mathematics wanted to hear everything the youthful inventors had to say. Many of them identified with Brin because, like him, they had escaped with their families from Mother Russia in search of freedom, and they related to Paige just as eagerly, since he was part of the duo that had created the most powerful and accessible information tool of their time, a tool sparking change that was already sweeping the world. Like kids playing basketball and dreaming of being the next Michael Jordan, the students wanted to be like Sergey Brin and Larry Page. Google was started when Sergey and I were PhD students at Stanford University in computer science, Page began. And we didn't know exactly what we wanted to do. I got this crazy idea that I was going to download the entire web onto my computer. I told my advisor that it would only take a week. After about a year or so, I had some portion of it. The students laughed. "So optimism is important," he went on. "You have to be a little silly about the goals you're going to set. There's a phrase I learned in college called having a healthy disregard for the impossible," Paige said. "That is a really good phrase. You should try to do things that most people would not." As proponents of tackling important problems and seeking transformative solutions, Brin and Paige were certainly armed with a healthy disregard for the impossible. And while not much older than the throng of high school students who packed the jammed auditorium, they were truly in a class by themselves. In the rich and storied history of American invention and capitalism, there had never been a meteoric rise comparable to theirs. It had taken Thomas Edison a quarter century to invent the light bulb. Alexander Graham Bell had spent many years developing the telephone. Henry Ford created the modern assembly line and turned it into the mass production and consumption of automobiles only after decades of work. And Thomas Watson labored long and hard before IBM rolled out the modern computer. But Brin and Page, in just 5 years, had taken a graduate school research project and turned it into a multi-billion-dollar enterprise with global reach. They were in Tel Aviv, but had it been Tokyo, Toronto, or Taipei, the Google guys would have received the same raucous reception. Supremely confident about their achievements and vision, Brin and Page had been on a roll ever since they started working together. They wanted no one, neither competitors nor outside investors, to come between them or interfere in any way. That combination of dependence on one another and independence from everyone else had contributed immeasurably to their astounding success. So I started downloading the web, and Sergey started helping me because he was interested in data mining and making sense of the information, Page went on, continuing with the pair's history. When we first met each other, we thought the other was really obnoxious. Then we hit it off and became really good friends. That was about 8 years ago, and we started working really, really hard on it. He stressed this critical point. Inspiration still required plenty of perspiration. There was an important lesson for us. We worked through holidays and worked many, many hours a day. It ended up working out, but it is hard because it takes a lot of effort. Page said that as they told friends about Google, more and more people started using it. Pretty soon we had 10,000 searches a day at Stanford, and we sat around the room and looked at the machines and said, "This is about how many searches we can do, and we need more computers. Our whole history has been like that. We always need more computers." It was a sentiment the students and teachers at the school could relate to. So we started a company. Being in Silicon Valley at this time, it was relatively easy to do. "You have a number of very excellent companies here as well," he added, alluding to the growing technology sector in Israel. "So this is also a good environment to do things like that." We started up the company, and it grew and grew and grew. And that is why we are here. So that